Hi, this is Tony Tolato. Welcome to Time Capsule, my episode 401. This is my magazine interview podcast, coming to you on a monthly basis. And this is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and comics help us explore our humanity. Recently on Star Trek Discovery, Captain Burnham and her first officer, Rayner, were hurled through time because of a time bug planted by Maul, one of the new villains this year. Sonequa Martin-Green had to go back and play an older version of Michael Burnham.
Can I just be honest with y'all? It was hard. And you know why? Because I had even forgotten, Sonequa had forgotten how far Burnham had come, right? I lived it, I created it, but I was so consumed with what was going on in the present day for Burnham that when even I was able to see where I had come from, when I had to step into it again, I was apprehensive about it. It ended up being thrilling to do, but man, what a painful place I used to be in as Burnham, you know, at a time like striving for approval, not having any sense of real self-worth and security and feeling like I needed someone to tell me that I was worthy and tell me that it was okay and forgive me for my moral mistakes and everything. Man, I remembered as soon as I was in it, I was like, ooh-wee, this was a painful place. This was a painful story to tell. It was an absolutely necessary story to tell. Thank you, Jesus, for letting me tell that story because we need to see that, but it was painful. So then it was really beautiful because it even spoke to me. It blessed me and inspired me to be able to say to myself, oh, man, I forget how hopeless this time was. Like, just keep going, you know, like if we could all get an opportunity to say that to ourselves from years and years ago, right? And each character could have that same moment with their with themselves from season one, right? Like there's hope. There's hope ahead of you. Just keep going and don't give up. So it meant so much to me on so many levels to tell that story. I have to give so much respect to Sean Cochran, who wrote the script, and Lee Rose, who directed the episode. We knew what we were doing as we were doing it. We were like, ooh, you guys, this episode is special. This episode is special. And let's hope that everybody takes it in the way we're doing it right now.
There's more Time Capsule, episode 401, so stay tuned. Also on Discovery, Saru, played by Doug Jones, had a nice moment with Burnham as he left to assume his new post in rebuilding the Federation.
Saru and Burnham are very, very more like siblings who have gone through the phases of competition and being at each other's throats a little bit and being jealous of mom's attention, you know, or whatever. And then growing into, oh, we've been through life and death together. We've had disagreements and then we've had coming back togethers again many a time over the course of the series. And we've protected each other. We have gone through so much so that when it comes to a place in season five where change might be afoot for Saru, where he has an opportunity coming, what does he do with that? His tether to the Starship Discovery really is her. So a moment comes, won't say what or why, but where he expresses a sense of family with her by touching foreheads with her, something that we Kelpians do. I did it with my sister Serana in an earlier previous season, and also with Sukal, my young protege that we found and I helped him become a Kelpian again and find himself among our people. Forehead touches, it's not a romantic thing, it's a family thing. And so there's a moment where Burnham and Saru, where I guide her into a forehead touch that was really, really quite touching for both of us.
Staying on Star Trek, here is the late Herbert Wright, who I call the father of the Ferengi, and he talked about Gene Roddenberry.
Gene will always catch you off guard. I mean, Gene was an amazing guy. He could be extremely funny. He was really feeling his way through the Next Generation because he had really not been given his opportunity. It seems ironic given his fame and his talent, but he'd never been given the opportunity in the first series really do what he wanted to do.
Yeah. The
classic series. I mean, he was on again, off again with the network and the studio. And then with the movies after the first one, and they kind of, it became its own steam engine. And while he got the scripts, he, you know, really, it was really somebody else getting to make the movies. So Next Generation was really the first opportunity for him to really put out there what he really felt that Star Trek should be all about.
John Billingsley's character of Dr. Phlox had many wives, as you'll hear in the conversation we have here. And also, he had a budding romance on board the original Enterprise.
That was one thing when I read the script. I thought, what's the doctor having these reservations for God's sake? Come on! I got three wives. The fourth wife isn't going to kill me.
That's right. So that'd be interesting, too. I don't think we've ever had a shipboard marriage on a Star Trek show, actually, except for Tom and B'Elanna on the last show. So
what I'd really love to do is sort of along the line of Mudd's women is have my wives visit, and perhaps they could all be played by my own wife, Bonnie Friederici.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I mean, she'd play herself at three. Maybe all the women on my planet actually just look like Bonnie. We could clean up at the conventions. She could come as the entire species.
Rhoda Mitchell of Pitch Black fame talked to me about her film, Sacrifice, a few years ago.
What appeals to me is that this is also a little bit of a mystery, and she just kind of peels the onion a little bit, and she keeps getting deeper and deeper in this thing. Was that part of the appeal for you as well, as besides kind of going in the genre area, it was also in a mystery as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's a real kind of complicated mystery there that, you know, it's a bit of a jigsaw puzzle that you've got to figure out while you're watching it. So there's the challenge for the audience, and, you know, you kind of can try and keep up with what's going on or guess what's going to happen next, and all that stuff I think is fun, especially if you're watching with friends, because you can, like, deconstruct the story in the process. And that, to me, kind of is obviously engaging, but... what I was really drawn to was the emotional potential, you know, the evolution of the characters. And I felt like the rawness of Tora and her needs were so kind of, there was an opportunity to explore a character that was very, that you could empathize with, because she was, in a way, her needs were so raw and so pure and so simple. And the situation was so complicated. That she had plenty of opportunity to just ignore what she was seeing, but she had this kind of inner integrity and a courage that compelled her to keep going deeper and deeper into trying to figure out what the truth was. And I think that was, you know, made her a very brave and compelling character, as much as she was vulnerable in the situation she was in, and the duality there was interesting to me.
There's also the aspect that I liked about her, you know, playing the part where you're playing her, and she's like, she's an outsider coming into this community, and they're not the warmest of people, and then that just kind of adds to the dynamic as well.
Yeah, and I mean, on just sort of a simple level, I think there's something kind of fun about a travel story, you know, and a fish out of water character, and the story itself takes you to a new world that we haven't really been in, or I didn't know anything about, even though my name is Mitchell, I'm sort of Scottish descent. So, although we were shooting in Ireland and everyone was pretending to be Scottish, I got to explore this, you know, the history of runes and this sort of ancient history that I have a blood connection to. So, personally, that was of interest. And there's something kind of fun about actually being an outsider coming in, like being the Australian / green card holding American who goes to Ireland to shoot the movie and meets all these Irish people and learns about Irish culture in Dublin. And, you know, that kind of the real experience of shooting the film is also mind expanding because you're learning about different cultures and whatnot. So that was exciting. I would have been a little more excited if we were shooting it in July when we were supposed to shoot, but we shot in November. So that's a whole different island. But the cold, brooding kind of Shetland islands that we were depicting, I think, were certainly articulated by the weather that we were experiencing. And there's this interesting kind of dark light and a brooding quality to the story that comes with that time of year.
Mm, cool. I mean, I consider it a classic, and I got to give you props for Pitch Black. And I mean, you just nailed it in that movie. And you know, there's similarities in a way, because both women they kind of have like a story or a backstory or even baggage, you might say, that's kind of holding them back or trying to get to where they need to get to?
Yeah. I think they're both kind of vulnerable in a sense because they have some, yeah, I guess Fry has the guilt, and I think that makes her kind of a vulnerable character because she's really kind of forgiven herself. And in this case, the character has the vulnerability of having this dream that she may never achieve and sort of longing. So these characters that are raw in that sense, and you don't necessarily know whether they're capable of any sort of courage because they're dealing with so many of their own demons. I think there's the kinds of characters that we can relate to because very few of us sort of wake up and feel like we can just take on any challenge. I think we relate to characters that have to struggle to take on the challenges and yet have the courage to face those challenges, however extreme they are. And obviously, in these genre movies, they're very extreme, you know, fighting aliens or finding killers and stuff. But, I mean, I think the real challenges we experience are much more simple and often as difficult. So those are the characters that we... that I personally connect to.
I was going to ask about, what about like the movie has its own mythology that kind of deals with history. What was it like to deal with that aspect of it?
Well, that was like fascinating. I mean, if you sort of get online and look into these things, there are peat bodies that have been discovered that reveal so much about the history of man. So I didn't know about these, you know, preserved bodies, and I didn't know anything about Celtic culture. Although I, you know, as I mentioned, my name's Mitchell, so I should have some sort of connection there. So the movie gave me an opportunity to look into this ancient world and feel my own sort of place in it, if that makes sense.
Thanks so much, Radha.
Thank you. Okay, bye.
I'll be back with more Time Capsule, episode 401, in just a moment. Let's go back to season 4 of The 100, as Richard Harmon talked at San Diego Comic-Con about what was in store for his character of Murphy.
Boy, you know, I don't know yet. Batman over there is probably the one I want to ask. Not that he'll tell you. But, yeah, I have no idea, because my character doesn't even know yet. Like, that's the thing. Only really Clark and Bellamy kind of has a hint of it. But I'm very curious to see the fallout of... I just got that. The fallout of kind of her, the decisions Clark's going to have to make and who she's going to tell. Because I don't think you could tell everyone, but she's going to have to let it loose eventually.
In season 3, V called Murphy a threat.
I was insulted by that, actually. Yeah, that, as Murphy, I was insulted by that. Like, you're waking up and then you see her. She's hated you for so long. Like, she's been rude and mean. And then you're just going to come in and we're going to be friends? Like, no. Just because you, like, it's like she said in season 2, and she said, just because they pardon you doesn't mean I have. So when she came in and was like, my friend, I'm like, you know what? Just because now you think we're friends doesn't mean it's that way for me. I still remember everything she's done. By the end of season 3, I think we have a little, maybe not friends, I think we have a mutual respect.
Where is Murphy's head at these days?
That's the thing. I mean, Murphy's just going to do what he's going to do. I think he's sick of it. I think he's sick of the way they treat him, for sure. Just being like, yeah, I did things. We've all done things. So you guys got over it with each other, but you're still holding on to something with me for no good reason. I killed 2 people. It's like the lowest death count on the show. Easily. I'm fairly certain Jasper's killed more than me. And at the beginning of the series, Jasper couldn't kill a fly.
Is there a redemptive path for him?
Whether if it's something that the audience deems morally questionable or not, he's going to do what it takes to survive, as I think we all would in this situation. I know I would. I don't fault Murphy for anything he did. I mean, so the 2 people he killed, that wasn't necessary, but it is. I mean, they tried to kill him anyway.
Are you surprised that he is a survivor based on how it kind of started off?
I'm shocked I'm here, I'll tell you that much. Like, I'm shocked I'm sitting here at this table right now, 4 seasons in. No, it never shocked me that he's a survivor, because he's such a... I'm surprised he hasn't gotten himself killed yet. Yeah, probably in a way I am. because of the way he conducts himself, he can sometimes be so relentless with things to the point of doing stupid things just to prove his own point. But what can you say? The man lives. The track record. He's got a good track record. He's undefeated. That's my favorite. I think Murphy's the perfect. I think better than any other character, Murphy has the ability to like plug him in with anyone, and he's gonna make that storyline like ooh, something interesting going on. Because he has such a different relation. I don't think Murphy has the same relationship with any two characters. He has a very different relationship with single person on the show. Usually a hatred, but different.
He would love to work with one particular actor who is no longer on the series.
Oh, I wish Pike wasn't dead because I liked working with Beach, man. Mike was just a legend. As well as Neil, who played Titus. Who would I like to see myself with more in season 4? I'd like some scenes with Chris, who plays Monty. We've never actually said words to each other in the show. We just realized that today. We've never exchanged a line. We've been in the same scenes, but we've never exchanged a line.
Looking back at The Walking Dead at the start of season 10, with Greg Nicotero, Gail Ann Hurd, and Angela Kang, part of the brain trust that ran this series.
One of the things that that I feel is when Gail and Frank first developed the show, they took it to a couple places and people were like, you can't do a show like this on TV. Like, first of all, how do you afford it? How do you make the zombies? How do you do all these practical gags? And people kind of, they didn't get it and they didn't understand how it could be done. So between Fox and AMC, they were the ones that went, yeah, this is something new and bold and different. And I feel like The Walking Dead really paved the way for a lot of great genre television now, because now it's acceptable. Listen, horror at times was always considered lowbrow. You know, when Silence of the Lambs won Academy Award for Best Picture, nobody called it a horror movie. They're like, it's a psychological thriller. Because there are times when horror has this lowbrow connotation to it. But then The Walking Dead comes along with great actors and great characters and great story, and all of a sudden people are accepting of genre material. And the
number of people who said like, it's not about the zombies, it's about the people. And yeah. we've been saying that from the very beginning. But now you know, the fans convince their friends, even to this day, that, you know, they've got 140 episodes to catch up on. But but it's like, no, just try the first one, you know?
And by the way, you know who wins? Everybody wins, because then you get all these great new shows and all this, you know, it's sort of like the, you know, I always go back and remember, like, I think it was like 1980, summer of like 80, 81, 82, and it was like Aliens and Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Thing, and like every summer all these great movies came out that just, except Creepshow, Road Warrior, you know, like every summer I was at the movies like every weekend seeing something. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like that's where we are with television. There's so much amazing stuff out there that 10 years from now, everything that we've been doing is just going to continue to explode and continue to provide amazing, like, material.
Well, I love the fact that we have Robert Kirkman's underlying comic book as, you know, well, but we're not through it, and I'll get to that, but as an inspiration, as like a roadmap that you don't follow precisely, but you refer to make sure that you're still on track, and I love the fact that the way that he ended it, that it's hopeful, that we've survived the zombie apocalypse, that we have an opportunity to make a better world. And there's still some bad people in it, you know? And there's still some people that, you know, that don't realize what a blessing it is to live in a world where you don't have to worry about, you know, your survival day to day. And I think that's a great reminder for all of us. And I think that the show continues to be relevant because we are dealing with a fractured world of people who are creating, you know, divisive groups. They're like the divisive groups that we have in the show, in which they're, everyone thinks they're the hero, everyone thinks they have the answer. And the great thing about this season is we bring a lot of our disparate groups together to fight an even greater threat. You know, and the greater threat is using fear as a weapon.
I'll say that something that I'm very proud of with this show, and, you know, we've all, you know, Greg and Gail have been there since the beginning. I started in season two, which is the seventh episode. And I think, you know, this show has such a legacy of showing both men and women and children who are strong. And the diversity of our cast. I mean, you'll even see, like, the people who are here, you know, from different walks of life, people from different countries. And I think, you know, to be able to have a show that is as popular as ours, that shows such a wide range of the types of people who are in the world, and that people from all walks of life can come together and work together to survive the odds and to be stronger together as a team than as, you know, divided foes, I think is a really hopeful message, and I think it's a really beautiful message, and I hope that that's something that, you know, certainly I think the fans connect to, but that that's something that we've done that is beyond just like being a TV show, you know?
Listen, you know, being a fan, you know, like, I've been going to Comic-Con for a billion years. Like, I would be here probably if I wasn't on a panel, because it's the fans that find the connection to the material that really helps elevate it. And I was saying earlier, you know, we're in the middle of shooting, so this is like a jolt of adrenaline for everybody that works on the show, because we finally get to share what we've been doing with the world. So to have that instant sort of gratification and approval, it's like, okay, we're doing something right. Now we're like re-energized to go back into battle to finish the season. You know, I love, listen, I'm a behind the scenes guy. I'm not one of the pretty faces that I'm a behind the scenes guy. I've, you know, makeup effects, and but people still stop me on the street and they just want to say thanks. They just want to thank me for what I've done for the show and what I've done for them. And I love the stories where people tell me I was in a car accident and I was in the hospital, and Sunday nights were the nights that, you know, what you guys did got me through. And I those stories mean the world to me, you know. And I just think it's, you know, the show, like Angela was saying, you know, the show started out with a diverse cast, with strong characters, you know, with Andy and Lenny and Sarah Callies and John Bernthal and Sonequa, who, you know, and all these amazing people that have come through the show. So to me, it's a tribute to the fans, and that's what we try to do every year. We try to come and thank them by showing them the trailers and getting them enthusiastic and excited about the show. So for me, the fan experience is everything, and probably because I meet somebody and I'll say, I have the same butterflies, so when people meet me, I sort of understand it, and then I appreciate it, and, you know, it's pretty,
I love the fact that the show has proven that, you know, a lot of people believe some have the misperception that horror genre is not for women. And I keep telling them, wait a minute, I was a geek or a nerd before those were even words. And, you know, and this is what we love. And I would like that myth dispelled once and for all. I mean, you go to any one of our events. We were just at this with the Walker Horde at Petco. More than half the people who showed up were women.
Yeah.
Half the people in the audience, half the people around the world who watch the show are women, and I just love that we show a world in which women can be strong, women can make great villains, women can change from not believing in themselves to becoming leaders. and you know, and I just love that it is a diverse world and a world where women have proven that they are equal to men.
The Andrew Lincoln Walking Dead movie is now only going to television.
I mean, I think that's more in Scott Gimple's realm, but, you know, I know that there have been many conversations behind the scenes that, you know, it'd be sort of out of school for me to talk much about it, but I think that, you know, they wanted to kind of hold that reveal because it's really exciting news for everybody. I think that it's great news, you know. I think that the Walking Dead deserves to be on a big screen, and Andrew Lincoln deserves to be on a big screen with it, you know, playing this iconic role that millions people worldwide have been following for so many years, so I'm just, as a fan, excited for that.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, the interesting thing is when we have our premieres and we screen the episodes in movie theaters, every single time Gail and I would be like, why do we not edit? You could put, and Scott Gimple and I, 2 years ago, we were like, we should do a film festival called like Night of the Walking Dead, and we just screen episodes in theaters and watch them all night and then do like Q&A and stuff, because it's a different experience, you know. I mean, always, you know, growing up and going to the theater to see movies, and it's a communal experience. What I love about The Walking Dead is The Walking Dead is a communal experience. Mm-hmm. People get together and watch it, mm-hmm. but to see it on a big screen, you know, and I know that was really when the idea of the movies came up years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was always like, well, Star Trek did it. Like, we should do it.
Remember we watched in the Cinerama Dome.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's really like the show has a complete, I can't wait to see the premiere in a movie theater, mm-hmm. because, you know, the visuals that we embrace. But I think that that was always the hope. Always the hope was like, how great would it be to have a Walking Dead movie in the theater? So the fact that that they've been able to make that happen, I mean, that's pretty monumental accomplishment from everybody.
I know you were hoping at one stage to have Andy Lincoln back to direct for season 10. Now that hasn't worked out. I mean, is there still the hope that he will direct?
Well, he shadowed. Yeah. He absolutely shadowed. You know, but it's all got to work. It's got to work in terms of our shooting schedule and his schedule.
Yeah. So,
and I can't believe that your name is
the universe.
Really,
that's really my name.
Perfect.
That is absolutely crazy. But the thing about it is, I don't know if you saw on Instagram or on Twitter all of the things that his photos that he arranged with the people at the hotel to put in Norman and Jeffrey's room.
Oh yeah, I was there.
He's still with us. Yeah. As Denai said, better than anyone on the stage in Hall H, when you're part of The Walking Dead, you're part of The Walking Dead, the TWD family forever.
Yeah.
It is much deeper and stronger than anything else I've ever been involved with. And that goes with people like John Bernthal and Sarah Wayne Kellys, who were only around for a few seasons.
Customizable podcast playlists, exclusive videos, special episodes like the Mix 100 podcasts selected by listener downloads. All this and more at Sci-Fi Talk Plus. And now with 1,000 episodes, uncut, and a special offer for free lifetime access now available until May 1st, click on the link in the show notes. No anonymous signups are allowed.
And that is Time Capsule Episode 401. I'm Tony Tolato. Thanks so much for listening.